We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
Good morning and welcome to another edition of Better Living, a show about the people and the organizations that make an impact around Dallas-Fort Worth. I'm your host this week, Jared Sandler of 105.3 The Fan. I want to thank you for joining us. This week, we're going to focus on two really important DFW nonprofits. Later on in this hour, with school starting up again, whether at home or in person, Dan Bailey, founder and president of Just Say Yes, a great nonprofit that works with the youth in DFW to combat isolation while at the same time imparting hope, will join us. But first, you all know about the Texas Rangers. You might not know about all the things that the Texas Rangers Foundation does as far as community outreach with back-to-school programs, the work they've done with helping families during this pandemic, and so much more. And so joining us to help share the story of the Texas Rangers Baseball Foundation is my friend Karen Morris, the Vice President of Community Outreach and the Executive Director of the Texas Rangers Baseball Foundation. Karen, thanks so much for hopping on this morning.
Thank you for having me.
All right, Karen, so I've gotten a firsthand opportunity to see all the amazing things that the foundation does and how hard you and your team work and the lives that you're able to reach and impact. And I think a lot of people, certainly Rangers fans, probably have seen or read or know about the baseball-specific or softball-specific elements to the foundation. But I know that there's so much more about it. But first of all, I guess just general perspective, what are the basics that people need to know about the Texas Rangers Baseball Foundation?
Well, you know, we kind of think of ourselves and look to try to be the kind of the heartbeat behind the team or the people in the community behind the baseball team. And so obviously baseball and softball is a focus of part of our mission with our, you know, large scale academy in West Dallas that we've operated since 17. We're proud to host, RBI games there. We had 500 athletes even during this crazy summer play games and provided kids with opportunities for baseball and softball, college scholarships. But we kind of take it beyond that. So it's our education programs that we have in many of the school districts here locally, our health programs, and just kind of being there when the community needs us. We really look at the organization as, you know, a three-legged stool, right? There's the team, obviously the baseball performance, and then you look at the game entertainment and the experience that fans have when they come to Globe Life Field at some point. And then the third part is really who we are in the community and who we are to our fans when they need us, when schools need us, and obviously during these times there's a significant amount of need.
All right, so the pandemic, Karen, I know that's impacted so many people in so many different ways. Well, what are some of the things that the foundation is doing in response or have done in response to the pandemic?
You know, initially, I think everyone thought this way. You know, when it first started, we thought this would be a short-lived situation. And so we immediately jumped to help our first responders and healthcare workers by providing meals as they were working long hours at the hospitals and urgent care clinics. And then beyond that, we partnered with a lot of the agencies who were on the front line. You know, the Tarrant Area Food Bank, North Texas Food Bank, Arlington Life Shelter, Mission Arlington, and Safe Haven, who were really, you know, faced with the immediate struggles of the food needs, the increase in shelter, attendance and those types of things. But beyond that, we've tried to figure out ways to impact our community creatively, if it's from transitioning some of our educational programs to be exclusively virtual, like our Summer Slugger math and science program, or our Fun at Bat program that we partner with USA Baseball and Arlington ISD. We created that to be completely virtual. And then as we look to this school year, you know, we tried to transition some of our programs to be virtual. At our academy, we continue to provide baseball and softball instruction, but also added lunch distributions for our families, knowing that they are facing a great need, and then adding, you know, Zoom and web-based programs, knowing that, you know, there is still a need. It's just getting creative and partnering with those that are truly on the front lines with these, you know, with these healthcare workers, with those that are facing these emergency needs, because truthfully, you know, these partnerships are what can help get those resources out in the community.
You know, I know that the pandemic, you know, like I said, it's impacted so many people so many different ways. One of my favorite events every year is the Triple Play event, and that's a big event I know that helps support the foundation. What are some of the things or how are ways people can support the foundation in lieu of this amazing event? And I'm sure other events and things that have maybe been delayed or canceled, put off, postponed, what have you. Because, you know, one of the things I know with organizations like the foundation, it's great. There's great work done, but they need support. You guys need support in order to help accomplish some of the things that you want to accomplish.
Yes, you know, having, you know, no fans in the stands obviously prevented us from having our raffle this season so far, which is a huge fundraiser for us, and our Triple Play in our gala event is a huge fundraiser for us as well. So, you know, obviously that was a struggle for us, but again, kind of getting creative. If you watch games and you see the Doppel Rangers or the cardboard cutouts in the stands, that's been a huge fundraiser for us, along with tours gives us a contribution per tour through the sale of masks that are included with tours. But beyond that, the foundation is lucky to have an endowment that we established about 3 years ago, thanks in large part to the generosity of our ownership, including Ray Davis, that provides a little bit of a landing spot for us so that we're able to continue to do really most of the good work that we're able to do, maybe not at the same extent or level financially, but we're still able to provide support. In fact, you know, coming up in September, we have an event that we're hosting where we'll be able to distribute some grants to nonprofits that we would traditionally have, you know, a night at the ballpark for and just can't this year, but we're able to at least still provide some financial support to those organizations. But if folks are still looking to help, other than the Doppel Rangers program, you know, obviously we take donations at texasrangers.com/donate. But we're also looking, you know, for ways to engage donors in meaningful ways. If there's a specific cause or specific area of what we do that they'd want to get engaged in, we love to have those conversations directly as well.
All right, so I want to quickly circle back to the pandemic, and you mentioned the meals for students, right? That was a part of what the foundation, the net the foundation has spread, and that's something that I think maybe people are familiar with at this point, but right off the bat, you know, there's so much going on, and with no school, that takes away maybe the only guaranteed meal or meals that some of these kids get. And it presented some challenges beyond what we identified on the surface. What has that experience been like helping out these kids who, you know, that what you're doing, the work you're doing and what you're able to see is help make sure that they get meals when otherwise it might be a challenge because they don't have that educational outlet that provides some of those meals for them.
Right. You know, we actually spoke with our partners at Dallas ISD and sort of got what their plan was and when they were able to provide meals. And they do provide some meals on Thursdays. And so we kind of looked at each other and said, okay, there's got to be another place that we can, you know, provide them with that access to food. So every Tuesday, we're distributing non-perishable food to kind of carry them through to Thursday. And then Fridays, since they've, you know, gotten a couple of non-perishable meals on Thursdays, so Fridays, we give them, you know, hot meals. So it's, you know, Chick-fil-A or Papa John's or Gus's Chicken, just to kind of change it up for these kids because, you know, it's kind of a special treat on a Friday to get that different meal. I mean, you talk to families when they pulled up, you know, we had a young mom pull up last week to pick up lunch. And she said, you know, I just never thought I would be in this place. I lost my job. I thought I'd easily find another one. And she's like, but yet here I am. And hearing those stories and then seeing, you know, the kids and the families come out and be so thankful, but also just, you know, they understand that this is just the situation that we're all in and being able to, you know, kind of combine resources and give those folks, you know, at least some guarantee. Because as you look at it, if kids are supposed to be succeeding in the classroom in whatever format that classroom is, they can't be hungry while they're doing it. And mom and dad or the families are trying to figure out, you know, the way to make ends meet. So if we can help in small ways, you know, that's something that we hope to do. You know, we've been able to give out gift cards to our partners at Albertsons to kind of help people fill in the gaps from groceries perspective, and then, you know, some backpacks and school supply distribution, and just seeing the faces of these kids and knowing that you're not just helping them on the field, but you're also helping them off. And with a real emergency need, it's, you know, it's what we need to do. It's what we should be doing, you know, truthfully.
Now, Karen, I guess, you know, I know that those interactions, right, the one you shared with that mom a second ago, like those are the powerful things that, you know, and I don't know if you need reminders, but are reminders like why you work so hard to do the things that you do, to be able to help people such as those and the people you actually do get to engage with. I'm just curious, this pandemic is obviously unlike anything that I'm sure you were prepared to have to take on through the foundation. What is, in general, this experience been like in dealing with some of the challenges and the things that you all have been able to do in response to that?
You know, I think, you know, initially, I think it was the unknown, right? And that's what everyone's dealing with during this is, okay, when will things go back to whatever we deem normal is? And what can we do to prepare our kids and the programs that we have to give some kids some semblance of that? And then you layer on top of it everything going on with George Floyd's murder and the, you know, the really calls for social justice. And many of the families that we deal with are really being faced with both of those challenges. And so trying to make sure that we're providing the mental and social and emotional resources that are needed, you know, even as we look to start school, we've pivoted with some of our partners to make sure that mental health and emotional and social health is a key part of our programs because, you know, the emergency needs and the food is a huge part, but being in isolation or being in your home when maybe that home that you're in isn't an environment that you really want to spend a lot of time in, you know, then we need to be mindful of that and figure out a way to help these kids. And I think those are, you know, the immediate things that we've noticed. And I think it's also, you know, getting flexible. You know, we had discussed some programs that we were going to launch this season, kind of put those on the back burner and instead, you know, launch some programs where we're honoring first responders and healthcare workers in a different way than we normally would. Instead of, you know, in a pregame presentation, we're giving them, you know, cardboard cutout representation or tickets to a game next year, or we're giving gift cards to teachers instead of giving them rewards for coming onto the field for teacher appreciation, you know, teacher appreciation night. Instead, they're getting gift cards to help prepare themselves for virtual classrooms or whatever the classrooms look like for them this year. So I think it's really getting creative and trying to, you know, understand that we still have our mission, we're still who we are, it's still, you know, youth athletics, military and first responders, education and health, but it's also, you know, just being there for the community and finding out what those needs are and partnering with the agencies that are there, you know, working as well.
I think you might have just referenced this. I don't know if you did by name, but you talked about the creative programming to maybe honor the first responders. Is that the Rangers Relievers program or?
It is. Okay. It is. So we've been, luckily, you know, we have so many fans that are first responders. And so we've heard so many of these great stories and wanted to be able to really capture their stories directly from their families and friends and honor them, you know, on social media. And I think everyone would say our players are, you know, incredible athletes and are, you know, we all enjoy watching them play. But in a situation like this, you know, that truly the heroes and the people that, you know, we're all looking up to are the people that are going in the emergency room every day and putting on, you know, all the PPE and fighting this virus so that we can all get back to something, right? Or those folks that are going to the grocery store and have been there working at the grocery store this whole time, you know, when we're kind of taking that for granted that someone's there. So giving an opportunity to, you know, recognize those individuals, but then also, you know, give them a chance to come out to the ballpark next year when we can welcome fans.
We're talking with Karen Morris, the Vice President of Community Outreach and Executive Director of the Texas Rangers Baseball Foundation. All right, Karen, so I know there's so much more I mentioned than just baseball and softball, but a big part of what the foundation does is support some of the youth programs. And I know recently it was announced, the 2020 recipients of some of the funding. And I think it was 12 different organizations totaling, was it $60,000, I believe?
Yeah, so every year since really our World Series years, we've given out a varying level amount of money towards organizations that are providing baseball and softball in our 5-state territory. You know, it's no secret that baseball and softball is expensive. You need fields, you need equipment, and we know that park and recreation departments and schools and youth organizations are always, you know, looking for ways to find support. And you know, in this situation this year, especially park and recreation budgets are getting cut because of, you know, financial shortcomings in cities, and same things with schools. So we, you know, we provide grants, and this year I think we hit 4 of our 5 states. We have given a grant to some New Mexico organizations, but those are always our harder ones. But we gave to 5 to 4 of our state territories. So organizations that range from, you know, small towns in Louisiana to, you know, to organizations here in Dallas-Fort Worth. But the goal is to give them financial support to continue to build on the programs that they have, or build new programs if that's the case.
All right, now Acme Bricks in the community. What can you share with us about that?
So Acme Brick is a great partner of ours, and actually traditionally presents is a presenting partner for our raffle. And they came to us and asked, you know, what can we do to immediately get back into the community? You know, we aren't able to give out raffle resources this year, so what can we do? And, you know, we looked around, and I don't know if, you know, if you have friends that are teachers or friends that are in schools, you understand the struggles that they're facing, you know, to figure out how to make a classroom friendly and, you know, in social distancing settings, or how to make a virtual classroom work. And teachers are creative and normally end up spending a lot of their own money to make that happen. And so the program allows for family and friends to nominate their teachers, or they someone can nominate themselves, to receive a $500 gift card. And so we're giving out $40,000 in gift cards. And I think in the first day we had over 900 applicants. So we know that it's a need, and we also know that people love to, you know, recognize the fact that these teachers are kind of performing like a work of a, you know, an army to get this school here off the ground.
Karen, I guess I'm curious in this applies to more than just the Acme Bricks in the Community program, but Rangers Relievers. If you're someone, maybe you're a program, you know, in a baseball program that needs help, or again, a teacher, or anyone who would fall under the umbrella of any of the number of programs, how do they raise their hand and say, hey, I you know, I'd love to apply for some support, or do they need to be nominated? What's that process like?
You know, we accept, really we accept requests at a rolling basis. So there's no formal grant window per se, with the exception of the baseball and softball grant program, which does have a formal window. But really, a simple email to foundationoftexasrangers.com with sort of some information and a letter of interest. Obviously, we can't say yes to everyone, and years like this year make it a little bit more challenging. But we do try and engage with nonprofits. We're also, you know, very lucky that we have a number of our players that do provide support to the foundation. And sometimes they may be looking for an organization that fits a certain niche. If it's, you know, single moms, or, you know, children facing certain health issues, or those types of things. So the more information that we have available, then we can share with our player relations department, as those players are seeking for destinations of funds as well. So we're always interested to hear about good work that's being done. And we know that, you know, we try to be aware of situations and be aware of what's happening in our community, but we're not everywhere. So if there's something out there that there's a need and it fits our mission, then we're absolutely happy to hear it. We may not be able to provide that aid to everybody, but at least we can be aware of it and see what we can do to help.
Okay, a few things there. First of all, is there anything, just anyone listening, anything that they can do to make either your life easier as you review, you know, their applications, or just things to note? Some, I don't know if tips and tricks is the right way to phrase it, but I know that I'm sure there's instruction obviously on the website, but anything that you think is important for these people to know that you find yourself when you're reviewing, say, I wish that they would do this to make it easier. Anything along those lines?
Sure. I think, you know, for us, we love being engaged in the work, you know, in the program, in the action, right? So capital campaigns are great for a lot of organizations to support, but we love to see the direct impact in young people and in the lives of kids in our community and the lives of families in our community. So I would always encourage people to think of those types of programs first. I think giving a clear, you know, concise description of what your organization is all about, and, you know, and being realistic, you know, we have an endowment, we do have our academy that we're operating. We give out about $130,000 in college scholarships a year beyond all of our programs. So we don't have unlimited resources. So, you know, sometimes the name at the front of the foundation makes people think that we're, you know, we have unlimited coffers, and that's not the case. But we do love to hear about those programs. So including, you know, a little bit about the program. And then, you know, kind of the simple things as it relates to baseball and softball. We love supporting programs. And my son plays like baseball, and I love that world, but we're probably not going to support your team tournament in, you know, a trip to the World Series in Florida. So that's probably one that you don't need to apply for. But if there's, you know, a real need in your organization, you know, we've helped out local little leagues in the past or local organizations when they've had unexpected loss, if it's through, you know, through someone damaging fields, you know, just from vandalism, or through a tornado blowing a field, you know, field and causing damage. So, you know, it doesn't necessarily have to be something huge. It could be something as simple as, hey, our fences all blew over and we just need some guidance from your grounds crew on how to fix it. I mean, those are ways that we can help kind of quickly as well.
All right. You mentioned the players earlier. You know, I know I've seen this in my role. I've been fortunate to witness the generosity, and whatever I've seen, you've seen 20 times over. What can you share with us about how special the relationship is between the Texas Rangers players and coaches and staffers and the foundation itself?
You know, I think it really starts with John Daniels and his staff, and it's been that way since he's, you know, taken kind of the realm of baseball operations, where it's just an expectation, and they start that really when they're in the minor leagues, that, you know, I think Tony Beasley always says it, like, to whom, you know, something is given, much is expected in return, and we are so lucky that that's sort of the mantra that they all carry. And Chris Woodward is the same way, where he and his wife are exceptionally generous and expect that from the players, and it's really not a hard ask. And, you know, if it's anything from coming out and showing up for an event, you know, with our kids at our academy and engaging with them, or if it's, you know, Lance Lynn supports one of our health and wellness program partnerships with the Just Keep Living Foundation, and, you know, he comes down and talks to them about health and wellness, or, you know, if when we were going through, you know, the initial, you know, situation following George Floyd's murder, we, Willie Calhoun and Taylor Hearn hopped on a Zoom call with some of our academy kids and really spoke to, you know, what it is to be a Black player in Major League Baseball and playing baseball, and why aren't, you know, and the questions you get asked. But they're always willing to step up in whatever way they can. You know, I think Shinsu Chu has given an extraordinary amount over his time with the Rangers, and we've been able to do a lot of great things. So we're lucky in the sense that these guys understand it's part of who the organization, you know, wants our players to be. But it's not like we have to go out there and twist their arms to do it. They want to be engaged in the community, and there are some that have, you know, have huge busy families on their own, and so it may be in a different, you know, way that they get engaged. More recently, you know, Kyle Gibson is, you know, an exceptionally charitable person just by nature. He and his wife are, and he helped direct a fund to us, a grant to us, the Rangers Foundation, because of his leadership with Teammates for Kids and Big League Impact. And through that grant and support from Lance Lynn and Elvis Andrus and Robinson Chirinos, we're able to serve 4.1 million meals and snacks during this COVID situation through a partnership with Food for the Soul. And that truthfully is because Kyle had such a leadership and such respect from that organization to get us to get such a huge grant. So those are just, you know, kind of, you know, we're just lucky to have those relationships and have them understand that being engaged in the community is a part of it, and that they want to do it.
I'm glad you mentioned one player in particular, not to take anything away from the others, guys like Kyle Gibson and gosh, Robinson Chirinos. I mean, it seems like, without knowing if with Robbie especially, he's been around for so many years now, if you ask him to jump for, you know, someone else for, you know, some generous purpose, he's going to jump and ask you how many times. But I'm glad you mentioned Chu, because, you know, he's not someone who's out in front of the media and does a lot of things behind closed doors to help others. But true or false, he's going to go down as one of the all-time most generous athletes that you've ever worked with.
100%, and quietly generous. You know, he shows up and does things if it's in his own, you know, in Korea or in with our Miracle League programs, or if it's with the minor league players that he stepped up and helped during this COVID situation. But he does it, and he does it quietly. He doesn't do it for the adulation. He provides scholarships every year for kids in Arlington ISD, and he has for several years, and doesn't really expect any attention from it. But that's just who he is, and, you know, his impact in the community, and he's the guy that you can just call and say, okay, this is what we need, and he'll do it. And he's that way on the field as well, but he's been a true, his impact kind of is long lasting on the foundation, and he doesn't seek that, you know, attention for it. It's just who he is as a person.
Yeah. I feel the need to mention, his generosity, because I know he doesn't, and certainly want to keep the things that he wants private, but I hope people know, how amazingly impactful he has been in this community. All right, so 30 games of giving. I want to get back to some of the programs. What can you tell us about the 30 games of giving?
Sure. So North Texas Giving Day is September 17th, and we were talking internally, and, you know, I think a lot's been lost, you know, with, you know, you know, initially the stoppage of, you know, the stoppage of play for COVID, and then there was kind of the delay in the start. And, you know, I think folks, without being able to come to the ballpark, you know, I think there's a little bit of, okay, what really is happening off the field? You know, what's the Rangers Foundation doing during this time? And so we thought, okay, you know, we're not usually one to tell our story or go on the corner and, you know, pound our chest and say what we do. That's just not who we are as an organization. But thought it was a good time to remind folks about what it is that we do and tell the stories of these families and tell the stories of the kids. You know, one story we love to tell is one of our academy athletes, Aaron Ledesma, came in as a freshman right when the academy opened, and just took every opportunity from MLB opportunities to just working out to our educational programs, and got herself virtually a full ride at Southern University to play softball, and then became one of just 12 kids across the country to get an RBI for RBI scholarship, which basically is a $20,000 scholarship. And, you know, it's kids like that that we want to make sure that those stories and those impacts are known, because fans should feel good when they're supporting the Rangers Foundation, you know, when they're buying a Doppel Ranger, or when they're buying a raffle ticket. We want them to know that there's good coming out of that. And then as we look towards North Texas Giving Day, we also want to remind folks that there are a lot of nonprofits that aren't seeing the same contributions that they traditionally see, be it because people are personally facing financial crisis or corporations are holding back because they are facing financial crisis. So there's a lot of need, and really any dollar matters to so many nonprofits right now. So just shining a light on both what we're doing, but also on the fact that, you know, North Texas Giving Day is a huge way to support nonprofits across this region.
Karen, since you're so heavily involved, if you don't mind, I'd love for people to just learn a little bit about your journey to this position and the person who's leading the charge. How did you get so heavily involved in this arena, and why has this become such a passion? I don't ask that, you know, for people listening. Karen, I've known you now for 5 or so years, and I mean it when I say passion, because I've been at these events and I've seen the way you speak to the foundation. So I hope people know that this is not just something you do and then it shuts down at 5 o'clock Monday through Friday, that this is something that is a 7-day-a-week thing for you and on your mind a ton. So how did this become such a passion for you?
You know, I think growing up, I'm the daughter of a football coach and an only child, so I'm a daughter of a teacher. My mom was a teacher, and I think I was literally like the Remember the Titans kid on the sideline charting plays. And I knew more about football by like 12 than most people whoever know in their lives. But on the other side, my grandfather was a huge, huge fan of the Brewers, and actually way back in the day worked with Bud Selig as his personal attorney. And so we used to go to Brewer games all the time, and I happened to be the granddaughter that was in town and was able to go, and my mom was a huge baseball fan, so got passionate about the sport. But throughout college, I went to Marquette University, and it's a Jesuit school that really focuses on the whole person and giving back, and you know kind of trying to figure out, okay, well, what can sports do? You know, sports obviously brings people together, but what else can it do for communities? And so I initially started with the organization in our marketing department, but my focus was primarily on our Spanish language marketing efforts and our community outreach into the Hispanic community. And so as our organization evolved, you know, everyone kept saying, okay, it's great you're in marketing, but you're not really selling anything. You're really giving back. And so as our foundation evolved, I started with the foundation meeting in 2008. And we've just been lucky, you know, in a sense with things that have happened, and it sounds crazy, but through the bankruptcy, then we ended up with this incredible ownership group that's led by Ray and Neil, that are exceptionally, they won't tell you publicly, but behind closed doors, they're exceptionally generous, and the community is a huge part of what their focus is. You know, we wouldn't have an academy if it wasn't for them to kind of say, you know, kind of kick the ball down the field to get it to happen. And so having their support makes it easy, because they can call with some crazy idea or say, hey, we're going to do this. Are you okay with us giving all this money away? And they're there to support it. And then having, you know, the support of JD and the players. But I think ultimately it's the stories like that family, you know, that came and got the food, or, you know, when we are able to have fans, it's seeing that connection between, you know, between kids and families who are, you know, maybe going through an incredibly difficult time, either health-wise or financially, or they lost a loved one. And then using the sport to bring a little bit of sense of peace. And I think even now that we're not able to bring people to games, but, you know, when we're handing out these backpacks and you see, or the food, and you see the thankfulness in the families' faces and the kind of relief that, and all we're doing is, you know, transferring some money from what we were able to raise selling cardboard cutouts and the passion of fans into that. It's a really, you know, kind of unique relationship. And I think the fans sometimes don't get to see that end result of, you know, maybe what they gave and how it ended up being used. And I think that's, you know, that's the story we want people to know too, is that we take very much responsibility in every dollar that we raise, that it goes back out into our community, and that we take that, you know, as a challenge and make sure that we're responsible with all those dollars and are proud of what we're able to do with it.
Karen, I know we've covered a ton. Is there anything else that you think is important for people to know about what the foundation does?
You know, I think I kind of wear two hats with the club, and you mentioned it earlier, the community outreach, community impact hat. So as an organization, you know, just like everybody else, we've seen, you know, the call for social justice and the call to really pay attention to the challenges that, you know, that so many are facing when it deals with racism. And so as an organization, we looked introspectively during this time, you know, what we can do better. And so we've, you know, renamed our community outreach department to community impact. You know, we're developing an internal council to give advice to make sure that we're not missing organizations that we should be supporting, and that our programs are created in thoughtful and supportive ways for all communities. And I think that's something that we're excited to kind of take on, and you'll see a little bit of iteration of that as we lead into Jackie Robinson Day and into the election season. For example, this Saturday we're hosting a voter registration event at our academy for our families in West Dallas to try and give these kids an opportunity to see, okay, you were passionate, you were angry, but here's how you can use your voice. And so being able to kind of transition into that as well is important for us as an organization, and also for young people in our communities, that we want to make sure that they understand, okay, this is where you can harness your passion and harness your energy, and here's the educational support we can give you to move that forward. But also internally, look at how we are as an organization, and how we're supportive of our, you know, our players that come from so many different places, as well as our employees.
Karen, again, last time, people want to support, people want to contribute. What's the best way to do it?
The easiest way is texasrangers.com/donate, or they can reach out to us at foundation@texasrangers.com if they have any further questions or information that they might need.
Karen, thanks so much for taking the time. Thanks for all the work you do in the community, and we appreciate you joining us.
Thanks, Jared.
All right, it was great hearing from Karen. Right now, though, it's time to chat with Dan Bailey, the founder and president of Just Say Yes, a great nonprofit that works with the youth in DFW to combat isolation while at the same time imparting some hope. So, Dan, first of all, thanks so much for taking the time and joining us this morning.
Thanks, Jared. Great to be on the radio with you.
All right, Dan. So I guess let's start with the root of the organization. How and why did the organization start?
Yes. We're in our 19th year, Jared, and it really started, I guess I can blame myself for this. I did something very dangerous back in the corporate world. I was in the high-tech sales world, and someone said, Dan, could you come volunteer in a school for us? We need a program on character and choices, and we really need help. And I said, sure, I can do that. And gave a program, and then they said, could you come back again to this other school? And Jared, every month for about a year and a half, I took off a full day to speak in these schools. And at the end of that time, I came home to my wife. Now, let me describe where we were. We're, you know, she's a stay-at-home mom, two kids in private school. I'm working for a large high-tech firm. And I said, Sue, I don't know what's going on, but helping these kids and seeing their reaction and them saying, gosh, I was going to do something different this weekend, but your talk really made me rethink that. I'm more passionate about helping these kids than closing a multi-million-dollar computer deal. And, you know, I expect her to say, hey, Dan, take two aspirin, call me in the morning, you'll feel better. And instead she said, that's fascinating. Let's think about that. Let's pray about it. And 6 months later, I resigned my job and have been doing this ever since. So we started Just Say Yes in 2002 and have not looked back.
So 2002, we're almost at two decades. How could you best characterize the growth of the organization during that time?
It's been beyond my wildest dreams, Jared. I had no idea what I was getting into, and no idea how it's expanded. We merged with another nonprofit just over a year ago called Aim for Success. We now have 25 employees. We've done programs in 42 states and have reached 3.7 million students, parents, and educators. So nothing I could have ever dreamed of 19 years ago.
I'm curious, when you started the organization, I mean, what would you have, and I don't know if you're a goal-oriented person or if it was just like, hey, let's go down this path, but what did you think, like, okay, if we can accomplish X, Y, and Z, then, you know, we'll be doing okay. But, you know, I imagine nearly 20 years later, you far surpassed that. But what were some of the initial goals in getting it off the ground?
Yeah, thanks for asking that. I saw students needing direction, and I actually had met a lot of different people from around the nation through some conferences I went to, and I said, if superintendents knew about this speaker, if they knew about this curriculum, if they knew about this parent program, they would definitely do this, but no one's pulling together the best practices. And that's really what I did in the corporate world, is I would pull together the best technology companies to present a solution. And so I said, what if we did that in the educational arena? So I started putting together different groups. And one thing we had in common, Jared, is we believed in the positive message. Like, I did not believe the Nancy Reagan just say no was the answer for youth. They needed a more positive view of their lives. They needed to first say yes to a dream or a goal, and then say, if you want that dream or goal and you get involved with drugs, bullying, unhealthy relationships, you're not going to reach what you really want. So that was kind of the impetus, is how do we deliver a positive message to youth to inspire them, but also give them the tools to not get derailed. So that was the vision, and groups came along. I met others. It's been quite a journey, and schools embraced it. And today we're impacting a lot of students.
We're talking with Dan Bailey of Just Say Yes, the founder and president. If at any point maybe you didn't catch all of what Dan had to say, or you want to learn more, whatever the case might be, the website, pretty simple, right? JustSayYes.org. Yeah, so go online. We'll share all the different ways you can connect with Just Say Yes. But again, you're in the car, perhaps. We don't want you texting and driving or riding and driving. So just remember JustSayYes.org, and you can find out all the information there. If you are in a place where you can jot down a number, you want to connect with Just Say Yes, call 888-579-5790, 888-579-5790. You can also just go online, again, justsayyes.org. Go to the Contact Us tab at the top of the website, and there's an opportunity for you to just fill out a form if that's the easiest way for you to connect. Now, Dan, let's get into some of the programs. I know Just Say Yes obviously has got a lot going on. I don't know. There are a number of them. Is there a particular program you want to start with? Or I guess I'll give you the ability to GPS our way through this.
I love it. Well, we're all about creating a positive climate for these various campuses. We work with a lot of underserved kids, and we go into the meet with the principal to say, we can impact your campus in three different ways. The high level is what we call motivational experiences. So there, we'll bring in highly effective speakers that have a story that they've overcome poverty, homelessness, drugs, or alcohol, and inspire students, maybe 500, 1,000 at a time. We call that our 40,000-foot view. And then we have what we call our 20,000-foot impact, which is wellness education. Now, that's going to be specific programs geared towards bullying, drugs and alcohol, healthy relationships, opioids, social media safety. And we'll bring that into smaller groups, maybe 50 to 100 students at a time. And then we have our ground game, which is our peer-to-peer mentoring. And Jared, this is where we're with the same students every week all year long. And we'll train upperclassmen like 11th and 12th graders to be the mentors. And then we have freshmen that the principal has picked out and said, these freshmen are on the fence. They could go either way. They may not come back next year. And we put them in the program. And we have seen phenomenal changes in the mentees and in the mentors.
Okay, so I want to ask you about that. So you referenced, I guess this applies directly to you with your experience and the story you shared in starting, starting Just Say Yes. But, you know, I think the people who sometimes are the ones who are doing the quote unquote helping are oftentimes the ones who are also receiving help in some way. You know, their experiences, just as I imagine those upperclassmen benefit tremendously from serving as mentors. And it's a mutual relationship or a mutual dynamic in terms of bettering yourself. So what has been important? What have you found has stood out about those successful matches and the successful relationships through that program?
So we have an overreaching philosophy that's a connected student is a protected student. You mentioned earlier about isolation. So many of these students are isolated. They may not have a strong family home life. Some are homeless. Some are just maybe their friends have backstabbed them. They're isolated. So what we see happen is these upperclassmen build relationships. They know their name. They see them in the hall. They go through a lot of the social-emotional lessons we have about respect and empathy. And suddenly that student can trust somebody, and it's life-changing for that freshman. But you really observed, you picked up on a key point, Jared. These mentors, if they're the juniors and seniors, their lives change because they're teaching lessons that are impacting them. And then the mentors have their own community where they hold each other accountable. And they said, hey, we're role models. We've got to watch what we do and how we live. And, you know, we've got to role model this for these freshmen. And a lot of our mentors used to be mentees. And they're like, this program so changed my life. I want to give back and help other freshmen. So, because, you know, other freshmen need what I got as a freshman.
What are the things for the freshmen, the mentees in this dynamic, what are the things that they benefit from the most, or what are some of the challenges? You know, I these mentors can have an influence, but not 24 hours a day. So what are the things that, you know, for other people who might be around people who'd fall into that category are important things to reinforce?
Yeah, I think the mentees that come into this program, I'll tell you one story of a girl named Tyranny, and she had been a fighter as an eighth grader, and she was angry. And we actually have her video of her story, and she said, "Hey, my dad was murdered when I was in the seventh grade, and I was mad at the world. I fought anybody and everybody." She said, "In ninth grade, the principal said, 'Hey, I've got this Just Say Yes program. I want you to join.'" And she said, "I'm not joining any program. You can't make me." He said, "Okay, well, you'll get to miss a class to be in the program." And she said, "Oh, where do I sign?" So she came in the program, and she said after 3 months, something started to change in her. She saw her life differently. People in the hall from that program recognized her, talked to her, and she said the real turning point was her nemesis from the eighth grade tried to pick a fight with her. And she said, "I was one inch from getting in a fight when my mentor, Jordan, came along, grabbed my arm and said, 'Tyranny, remember the lesson this week. You have the power to walk away from this fight.'" And she said, "I walked away from the fight and I've not fought since." And she said, "I realize I've got a future." And she said, "I'm now a junior and I'm helping a freshman deal with the same things." So she went from being a mentee to a mentor. So it's stories like that that just, you know, fire me up every morning, Jared, to hear we actually were able to pull that student out of isolation into relationship.
That's amazing. How many of the mentees end up becoming mentors? Is that a rare occurrence, the story you shared about Tyranny, or is that something that, you know, you see happen somewhat often?
Yeah, so I'd say about a third of them end up becoming mentors. You know, they have different journeys they go on, but the key that we do with this is we're giving them tools for life. I mean, we have mentees and mentors that have come back and said, the tools I learned in this program put me on a different trajectory. And I was able to get, you know, I learned communication skills, how to resolve problems, resolve conflict, how to be a leader. So they're really life skills that they were able to take with them from that point forward.
Okay, you mentioned, use the word nemesis. And, you know, that's I guess, one word, you know, bully, rival. You know, it's all the same, the same umbrella. And I don't know. I'm sure that there are people out there. I know there are people out there who claim they've never been on the receiving end of bullying. They've never had a nemesis. But I don't know how many people actually go through those years and not, you know, be bullied. Maybe they're not perpetually bullied, and maybe it's more severe for some than others. But everyone's been on that side, and I'd also imagine that a lot of people have done the bullying, you know, whether they realize it or not.
Right.
And maybe there's not that intent to the stigma of that word, but it could have. I'll raise my hand. I've been bullied. I dealt with it in a bad way, but I also know that there were kids that, you know, I thought I was just making other people laugh and having a good time, not realizing the impact that it was having on those kids. And I guess what's important, I think bullying is not necessarily in a good way, but it's so fascinating because it is such a present part of life. What is important to understand about that dynamic?
Yeah, you described it well. So our programs basically say every student has value. Every student has dignity. It doesn't matter their background, their weight, their race, anything. We look at every student and say, you have value. We will treat you with dignity and respect, and we'll also train you how to look at others that way. No one is less than you, and no one's above you. So that's core to what we're teaching these students. We had a girl named Jasmine, who actually, we do a big annual fundraiser, and she spoke at that with her mom. And Jasmine said, hey, I was in alternative school for fighting, for drug use, and a lot of that was because I'd been bullied so much. She was overweight, and she ended up fighting, and then to just, you know, medicate, took drugs. She said, I came out of that, and they put me in the Just Say Yes program. I was a mentee, then I became a mentor. So she's now a junior, and her mom's on stage and said, let me tell you the turning point with Jasmine. She got out of alternative school, got in your program, but she was still bullied. And I got so mad as her mom. I said, next time you see that girl, you punch her. You punch her with everything you've got. And Jasmine looked at me, this is her mom talking, and said, Mom, I can't do that. I've got mentees that are watching me. And the Just Say Yes mentor coordinator, she's like, you know, she's like a second mom to me. I couldn't let her down. So no, I could never do that. And her mom started crying and said, I realized my daughter was a better person than me. And the thing that changed her was the Just Say Yes program.
What other programs, I know we sort of bullet pointed some of the other programs. What's another program you'd like to highlight or maybe expand upon?
Yeah, well, you know, what's interesting is we have a social media safety program. And we spoke with one school district, Jared, and you know what they said? The number one reason for high school students being expelled, do you want to take a guess at that? Or
posts on, you know, on these social media platforms? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, actually, it was sexting. So, it was social media. It was taking inappropriate pictures and sending them. They had more students suspended and expelled because of that. So we've developed a social media program that talks to students about what you were alluding to, which is what are you posting on social media? How does that impact your college recruitment and your future? And we talk about sexting, and very few programs out there can do that in a way that's based on health and research and brain chemistry, just all that. Ours are all, we use the Centers for Disease Control. We use a lot of the research out there. And the neat thing is we have a parent program with every one of our programs. So we equip parents on how to deal with these issues as well. And if we get parents equipped, that's a game changer. That's been really powerful, seeing parents engage on some of these tough topics.
We're talking with Dan Bailey, the founder and president of Just Say Yes, justsayyes.org. If you want to go online, maybe you want more information on something we've covered, information on how to contact, again, justsayyes.org. Dan, obviously the pandemic has totally changed the dynamic for so many, especially in the nonprofit world. What are some of the programs or what are some of the things that Just Say Yes has done or been involved in response to COVID-19?
Well, you've heard the word pivot a lot, and we have been major pivot mode because, you know, we were in 123 school districts last school year, and you can imagine how many of those are either going virtual or hybrid. And so we've had to move all of our programs to a digital platform. So where they used to be live programs with the speaker. So right now we're in the middle of filming 56 different programs so that any school can bring our programs in virtually, either through pre-recorded programs, and we'll have survey and follow-up questions with those, or we're positioned to also do virtual programs so they could be streamed through Zoom. And there actually are a few schools that say, hey, we still want your live program. So we can really bring this, our message in three different ways. And we're having to be very creative and nimble through this time. But I have a great leadership team that is just running with this full tilt. And it's fun to see. We're actually going to be able to reach more students, Jared, because of this. We're going to be able to go, you know, nationwide in areas we never could have gone to before because we're now going to have everything on a digital platform.
What are some of the challenges? I mean, with no school or maybe no in-person school and kids not having that social outlet, what are some of the things that you've noticed that have been challenges during this time?
Yeah, it's. I've spoken to several high school principals over the last 2 weeks, and one over in West Dallas, he said, you know, Dan, not only do we want to do your programs, our students need your programs now more than ever. And, you know, I shared with them our new mission statement, which we actually developed, Jared, pre-pandemic. We developed it last fall, and I told him, I said, you know, I think our mission statement's more spot on now than when we first wrote it. And it's, you know, growing value and vision in youth by combating isolation and imparting hope. And that's what the schools are. They're like, our kids are more isolated now. They're more hopeless now. We need your programs more than ever. So, they're coming to us and say, no, don't stop your programs. Find a way to get to our kids. We'll provide the platform. Please, please, we need you. So anyway, it's really gratifying to see them even reaching out to us saying, figure this out. We need you more than ever.
Dan, I think with these organizations, people such as yourself do so much and put in so much time and effort, and you've got a great team that support you in those efforts, but at the end of the day, it's tough for organizations such as yours to exist without the support of a community, whether that's right. You know, just you know, community I guess defined in the most general sense. But what are some of the ways people can get involved? What are maybe some events that you all have? I know that the pandemic has totally change the schedule for so many when it comes to this, but what are some of the ways that people can give back? I want to talk about that, and let's start with some of the events that you guys might have coming up.
Yeah, well, over the next several months, we actually have three significant events, and what you said is so spot on, Jared. We need the community. We have over 600 individuals that support us. We've got approximately 9 private foundations that help us. And without those, we couldn't do what we do. We have people who give as little as $10 a month because they believe in what we do. And we need the regular small donors, the large donors, and everything in between. But the three events we have, the one coming up September 17th is North Texas Giving Day, which I'm sure a lot of your listeners have heard of. And we have a $50,000 match where we've had two donors come together to put that out. So if we can raise $50,000 that day, we'll end up with $100,000. So that begins, early giving begins on September 1st, and it'll run through September 17th. And those links are out on our website, but North Texas Giving Day. Then the next one is our 10th annual celebration, which is going, as you referenced, we're making that virtual this year. That'll be October 20th. And we're going to have, we have some special guests that we're going to have on video, and we'll be interviewing students, and we'll have a live auction that'll be done virtually. So that's a huge event for us. That'll be October 20th. And then the last one is a golf tournament. Preston Center Rotary has selected us, this is our third year, being their beneficiary of the 55th annual Westifer Golf Tournament. That'll be at the Cowboys Golf Club in Grapevine on Columbus Day, which is October 12th. So if there's anyone that's golfers out there that would like to sponsor a team, that will be an in-person event. Where the other two will obviously be more virtual.
All right, what's your golf game like?
My golf game? Well, before I had back surgery, it wasn't bad. So, I had to give up golf, but we'll have some really good players out there, and we'll definitely have a good time. We've had Coach Avery Johnson came out last year. We always have a celebrity that comes out to be part of it. So, and, you know, it's the Cowboys Golf Club, so you never know what Dallas Cowboy players you might see out there.
Well, okay, people can't take part in these events. You know, I know that the information is online, obviously, but I'd love, you know, justsayyes.org, and there's a donate button. But just if you wouldn't mind sharing ways people can support, maybe if they're just their calendars booked or whatever the case might be, and they can't take part in these events.
Yeah, so I think, I mean, we are constantly looking for people to help us, you know, from a funding standpoint, whether it's a monthly donor, gifts in kind, services. We have a lot of people that donate their time and energy to help us with, you know, various volunteer opportunities. Because of the COVID situation, we really don't have volunteer opportunities in the schools right now, but we do have like a committee that's helping with our 10th annual celebration with silent auction items and coordinating that. We also have a mentor graduation that we do gifts for, small things. One of the really, this is really small, but it's really impactful, Jared, is we have volunteers that write notes to every one of our mentors and mentees. And last year we had about 200 students involved in our program, and every one of them got a note, or more than one note. And then, you know, people don't write notes. And when these students get them, they're like, oh my gosh, this person. So that's kind of a fun way to volunteer. And through our website, if anyone wants to volunteer, there's an opportunity to, you know, to click the link or email us. But, you know, it takes all of us to make this happen. So we love people. We love encouragement. We love volunteers. And yeah, it's you know, we're all about healthy relationships with students, Jared, but we're also about healthy relationships with the community. We want to be in relationship with the community and welcome any and all that want to be part of what we do.
Dan, is there, you know, we've covered a lot. Are there other things you think are really important for people to know about Just Say Yes, whether it's ways to participate, ways to help someone who maybe could benefit from the programs, or anything else that, again, like I said, you think people would find valuable?
Yeah. You know, to me, one of the things we try to say is when we get into schools, it's typically mother bears. It's moms, and they may be moms of elementary, middle school, high school. They're like, our students need these programs, and you know, I want this in my school. I want, and usually that's how many of our programs start. They're like, hey, we need a bullying program in our elementary school, or we need a drug and alcohol program for Red Ribbon Week. And I'm sure there's people listening that are educators, they're teachers, counselors. So that would be my encouragement. If you're involved with students, whether you have students, whether you have grandchildren, anyone that's involved in the school system, is the students or the educators, we have programs that can make that school better. We can help students say yes to their dreams and goals and no to risk behaviors. We can empower parents. We can call kids out of isolation. We can bring hope. And so my encouragement would be, check out our website. Think about your students or, nieces or nephews that maybe could benefit from this program. And we want to serve the community. We want to students to see, like I said earlier, that they've got value, they have dignity, and give them the tools so they can see their future with new eyes.
Again, justsayyes.org is the website. All the information, programs, contact information, donating, it's all there, justsayyes.org. Dan, thanks so much for taking the time to share your story with us and for all the work you do in the community.
Jared, it's been awesome. Great speaking with you, and thank you for what you do.
Well, there you go. I'm Jared Sandler of 105.3 The Fan. Thanks so much for joining us. Tune in next week as we focus on other organizations doing great things in our community right here on Better Living.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.